Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the grandson, "There's a fight going on inside of me, and it's a terrible fight. This fight is between two wolves. One wolf, this wolf is evil. It is anger, envy. It's full of sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. But the other wolf, this other wolf is good. This wolf is joy, peace, full of love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." He looks at the grandson and continues to tell him, "The same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." And the kid thought about it for a minute, looked up at his grandfather, and asked him, "Grandfather, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah.
Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you are listening. Bienvenidos, que tal, okay, namaste, and welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosting duties, live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio, holding down the other half of our hosts and duties. Some call him Unc, others call him the Lions historian. I just simply call him my best friend because he's my dad, Bill Green. Good evening, Daddy-O. What's happening, man? Que pasa?
What's up, Wilfredo? My oldest son, best friend. Yeah, man, you got the intro down pat. I mean, I'm loving hearing you just
hearing it just roll off your tongue, man. Beautiful music, beautiful music. How you doing?
Doing great, doing great. It was 50 degrees up here today, so, you know, it was some basking in a little sunshine, so it was good, you know. It's always good when that happens.
I know, that's right, man. Yeah, it bumped up to 70 down here, man, but followed up with a rain and hailstorm, you know, so you can imagine what my sinuses are doing right now. But, hey, you know, it's all good, right? Nobody said it always had to be pleasant.
Yeah, amen to that. I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine what your sinuses are going through.
Just a little bit. But usually when I can catch it, like, you know, whether it be morning or afternoon or early evening, but it's when a sneak attack happens, man. That's, you know, when I wake up with, oh, my God. So anyway, man, but I ain't going to stop whining about that. Half the show will be gone by the time I shut up. So what's up, man? What's in the news today? Oh, I guess you got to do your due diligence first. Let me get out of the way. Right on.
All right, yeah. What now, right?
Now what?
There you Well, excuse me. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we begin every show, we like to remind our listening audience just a few things. As you can already tell, Dad and I waste no time getting into the flow here on our show. So before we do really get the engine rolling, there's a couple of things we just like to remind you. And I'm speaking slowly because I'm sure some of you all know what it is right now. So you're stumbling and rumbling, bumbling to get that pen and pad. Grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a marker, envelope, and Dad's favorite, a napkin. You know, that McDonald's, Wendy's, Taco Bell standing, a napkin. You can cut somebody with it, man. It's so. Anyway, I'm not even going to get started on that.
Napkin.
The running thing. Sue asked me the other day, why did napkin? What is up with that, man? You know?
Just tell us a black thing.
Oh, man.
Oops.
Oh, man. But, so sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. It's that kind of night tonight. Happy Monday. Grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper. We want to make sure that if there's any questions you have, any comments, anything you might pick up from our show tonight or something you want to share with us, that you don't forget it. So you say, well, Will or Bill, how do you do that? What do you mean? So we have different ways that you can engage with us here on the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. You can call in directly and chime in, ask us a question, give us a comment. Hopefully it's nice, and Dad will keep you on the show. You can just dial in directly. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, 516-453-6094. And if you press 1 on your keypad, your number will light up on our queue. That'll let us know you want to come on in. And we'll bring you in. You can also chat with us on the Blog Talk Radio site with your free Blog Talk Radio profile account. You can engage with us directly through the chat. If you're not really feeling up to calling, just type in any questions or comments or anything like that in the chat room as well. And, of course, Facebook is open in the event page, so you can always hit up the discussion piece as well. So no excuses. We'd like to hear from you, you know, so hit us up. Let us know what's on your mind. Right, Dad?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. All the time. Yeah.
Not sometimes, like you might see on Facebook. We mean
no.
All the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. So, yeah, happy Monday. Today is March 14th, which some may refer to as Pi Day, and not the apple, blueberry, peach pie that we know, but the mathematical symbol, P-I, that's spelled P-I. Pi Day, because it's 314 and pi is 3.14159, et cetera, et cetera. So that's just a little bit of my nerdism coming out for a second as I celebrate.
I like
Pi
that.
Day.
So I started salivating for nothing.
Yeah, sorry, man. It ain't that kind of pie.
How did I let Pi Day get by me?
No.
Yeah.
We're not going to Baker Square, Dan. We're not going to that. No. We probably could have got something good. Yeah. I'm sure they were
serving. You know what Baker Square was before it became Baker Square?
I don't remember.
Poppin' Fresh.
Poppin' Fresh. That's right.
I remember
that now. Yeah.
Yeah. See what you did to me, man, when you said pie? Hey, there it is, right on time. Go ahead, man. Go on. See, already I'm slipping. Go on, man. Go on, keep your stride.
That was it. It was just like, hey, you know, just getting into our discussion. So yeah, I mean, you asked a good question. What is, you know, going on now? It's still Ukraine situation and. Most recently, you know, Brittany, Griner, the WNBA star, is being detained in Russia. I'm just saying, you're saying what's happening in the world, in the news. So
I guess that's important.
Gas is getting higher. You know, I told you, you can't even go to Indiana now because they'll get you out there too. So where should we go? Which way should we venture?
Okay, well, you know, let's keep going.
I was asking you a question.
Oh, I thought you were just making a statement. No, man, don't ask me a question because you never get a chance to talk about what you signed up to talk about today. Go ahead, man. Keep on. Yeah.
All right, so we're continuing then our piece from last week, and also because this is March, as we also acknowledge Women's History Month. Last week, I mentioned women movements that date back as early as the 1900s. In particular, early 1900s. In particular, was the first National Women's Day, Women's Day that was celebrated February 28th in 1909 in New York. But as I was researching this information, I came across some other information. Again, as I mentioned in Wednesday's show, and I wanted to bring up today. So looking at that time, 1900 to 1909, in 1900, there was a conference, the National Baptist Convention, in Virginia. And there was a woman, a black woman by the name of Helen Burroughs. Or if you look her up or Google her, you'll see Nanny Helen Burroughs. And she gave this speech that was entitled, How the Sisters are Hindered from Helping. And this particular speech that she gave was overwhelming. And in 1909, she founded what was called the National Training School for Women and Girls in Washington, D.C., all from her movement and the speech and her community activism, et cetera. So Helen Burroughs was born May 7, 1879, in Virginia. Both her parents were formerly enslaved. Her mother moved to D.C. right after her father had died, which was, Helen was still pretty young. She had graduated with honors from the high school that was formerly called M Street High School, but now it's Paul Lawrence Dunbar. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's funny, like you never really think about other schools named the same as your school in other cities and countries. Anyway, sorry. But anyway, so she graduated with honors and she went on to pursue a teaching job, but she was denied a teaching job in D.C., you know, but she didn't let the obstacles to become a teacher and to help those in need. She didn't let the obstacles she had to deal with being a black woman in the early 1900s, she didn't let that deter her from accomplishing her goal. You know, she had this goal to help and provide education for those in need, black Americans, in particular black women. So after she presented this speech at the National Baptist Convention, the organization, again, was so overwhelmed by her speech, they decided to support her idea of establishing a school and educate and train Black American women. So check this out. You know, she gained support not from the wealthy, white, rich people. You know, this school gained its support. Her goal, this vision she had, was supported from small donations all over, from other Black American families, women and children, and they raised the funds that was necessary to start this school. So this is 1909, you know, 1909, that they put together this model to provide this method of education that was needed. You know, and they say that this curriculum that she had that was really vigorous, too. It was really tough. It wasn't like just some okey-pokey, easy type stuff, you know, just to get by. You know, and these courses were, you know, vocational and academic. You know, there was stuff such as dressmaking, power machine operation, you know, they did with music, physical education. Their writing activities ended up formulating a school newspaper. You know, so there were many women who were developed in different skills, skill sets, if you will, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I thought about you when I was researching all this information, man. And this is what made me think about you. So she created her own history course that was dedicated to informing women about society influencing Negroes,
influencing.
Black America. Influencing. Thank you. Bye-bye-bye. But again, dedicated to informing women about these society influencing Black Americans, you know? And because this is something that wasn't discussed in regular history type curriculums,
right.
You know? So, yeah, I thought about you with this. I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also, in addition, she championed this cause to challenge the image of Black America, as I'm sure, you know, you can imagine. Excuse me, you can imagine what that image was, you know. But, you know, she wanted to, erase these images in America about how they saw us, you know, in particular, Black women, of course. You know, racial pride, respectability, worth ethics, all key factors in the training that was offered by this national training school. Racial uplift ideology, again, erasing and trying to get rid of that image. So she died in May of 1961, and 3 years later,
wow.
they changed the name of the school to her name. And you asked me last week, you were asking me, is that the name of the school now? And I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the school, but no, they changed it to the Nannie Helen Burrow School 3 years after she passed away. So 1964, yeah, they changed the name. Nannie Helen Burrow School in Washington, D.C. So I didn't know anything about, you know, anything about her until I started looking at other information. And again, it's amazing how full of fortune, you know, the rabbit hole can be sometimes, how you can find pieces of wealth of information that you didn't know. And I'm grateful and thank you for giving me the time to share this with you and everybody else listening,
man.
Tonight.
Yeah.
You know.
Heck yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I talk sometimes about, I mentioned some shows when I say that we're in the fire before rising from the ashes, right? You know, so we know about, you know, her growing up, and she made this speech and, you know, the opened up the school, and her vision became a fruition, and she helped so many people then and influencing. I got to work on that where we are now. But, you know, in the fire, man, you know what I mean? Her father died when she was young. They moved from D.C. She was born in Virginia. You know, she attended school in Kentucky. She worked in Philadelphia for a while as a writer for a newspaper. She returned to D.C. She was still trying to get a teaching position, and they still refused to give her a position in the school system. You know, she took on other temporary jobs, you know, being a janitor, a bookkeeper. You know, eventually she finally became a teacher, and she worked, you know, she worked the system. Well, you know what I'm saying, worked the system in a good way, you know. But it's through that fire, you know, before she, you know, before her idea for this school came into reality, you know, and just kind of touched me a little bit, you know, and
absolutely,
and what she went through,
how could it
and
not?
How
yeah.
it, and yeah, you know, and how it came to be. So again, thank you for giving me that moment, Dad, to share that, and it's always an honor and very grateful for this platform to do so. Yeah.
More
Nanny
more.
Helen Burroughs. I know.
Yeah, more. And what was you saying again? Because you kind of clipped out, and I wanted everybody to hear it about the ashes.
That I feel like that right now that we are in the fire before rising from the ashes, in reference to rising from the ashes like a phoenix, and right now we're in that fight, you know. You're like, so what do you mean? So, you know, like even in like movies, you'll see like the beginning of something, and then years later, you know, this story begins. You get a little background, but what about the stuff in between? So I feel like we're like in the stuff between that you don't really hear about, you know. But just, you know, trying to fight for things to be better in this world, you know.
Amen. Yeah. And, you know, when you first was running it down last week, of course, a name that Helen Burroughs, right?
Yeah.
A name that I had absolutely no knowledge of, no awareness of. What was my man's name? Oscar Richelieu, I think was his name. You know, the movie Mogul, I guess they say. Anyway, you know, these names, the way we just keep bringing up these names. But sometimes bringing up names that we don't know sometimes inspires us to acknowledge names we do know under certain circumstances, right? Like I'm thinking about my our Aunt Edith Smith.
Our Aunt Edith. You can't keep Edith to yourself. I'm sorry.
As we were taught to say growing up, aunt, as my Aunt Edith, you know, who's, I think, 107, you know, and I was trying to look up, and I'm not going to, because I'll just get choppy and mess it all up. But, you know, I wanted to be sure about the name of the college that she graduated from with honors, you know. And we're talking about back in, like, the, I think, 1939 or something like that. I mean, just saying that, 1939 is when she graduated from college. What the heck was going on in America, not just in 1939. And, see, this is where, you know, I got piqued listening to you last week, not just on the show, but when you were talking to me in show prep, and you were talking about Helen Burroughs, you know, how it, thinking about not just what she accomplished, you know, at the peak of her life, using that year as the springboard backwards in time, which I think sometimes we fail to do because, you know, we're not well schooled on an understanding of the chronological order of history anyway, or in this case, herstory, right? That's the term you used last week.
Right,
you know, thinking
right.
about, okay, we can talk about at what point she founded a school, but going backwards in time, like what year was she born? What the heck was going on in America then? What ashes did she rise from? And you talked about it wasn't really working the system because the system wasn't designed for her to work it. So she had to learn how to work around the system, you know, which is what the peril and the challenge was for everybody born of her era, you know, had to learn how to circumvent the system that was not conducive of success for Black people, Black women, you know, in particular, right, which was the point of even wanting to tell the story in the first place, you know, to celebrate a moment in, you know, in Women's Day or Women's Month or however it's broken down, women's history, really, or, I'm sorry, herstory. You know, and that's what inspired me or jarred my memory or piqued me to recall what an incredible journey Aunt Edith must have had, you know, to graduate from a school in the 1930s. Okay, and how old, what is the usual average age when you graduate from college? Now, I'm outside of my league here. You'd have to help me with that, man, because, you know, college for me was the Army. So what are you, about 19 or so? What's that? What do you think, 20?
Graduating from college?
Yeah, what do you think the average is? I mean, I'm asking you. This isn't a quiz because I don't know. So
I say the average now is what?
Well, anytime.
Just, 23,
you know, I mean, that doesn't change.
23, 24, okay. Something like that.
Well, that's kind of going to – that's well, you graduate from high school around 17. College
22.
Is usually about 4 years. So that would be 21
right
around there.
22. Sure.
Obviously, you don't want to use me as the gauge because I was 19 when I got out of high school. So you start saying 24 and stuff like that. That's how old I would have been, you know. So most people, you know, I'm thinking about Arma and relatives we know that graduated from college. Yeah, 20, 21, right around there, right? So
sure.
Figured maybe she was 20, 21 when she graduated from college. So, you know, then the math starts working. You know, because when you drop a number like 107, okay, well, you know, so we're talking about, you know, go back 107 years. So that means she was born what? You go 100 years would mean 1922. You subtract 7 from that, what, about 1915, somewhere right around there. You know, in 1915, what was, and when did you say Helen Burroughs established her school? What year was that?
1909.
So that's 8 years before Aunt Edith was even born. But this is, you know, the theme. See, this is to me where we start, you know, connecting the dots that we never got to connect.
Yeah.
This is the history of Americans of color that we never really got to celebrate. You know, and where it was never handed down, not just from word of mouth. Okay, yeah, that's part of it. But this should be, you know, some historical perspective. This should be, you know, something Black history, you know, should already have benchmarks around to highlight certain achievements. This should be like the who's who and the accomplishments of Black American history, things like that. I mean, you think about 1909. So, you know, she was probably like in her, what, 50s maybe, you know, just speculating. So that means somewhere in the mid-1800s. Man, I mean, America is not that the America we know, not the American history of those who were indigenous to this country before it was even given that name, but the America that we know, that we've had shoved down our mouths. You know, that you talk about 1850, you know, this country wasn't, as we know, it wasn't even 100 years old yet. You know, so this country is too young to not know, you know, the immediacy of a recent history, which is the beginning of this country, which, you know, using 1775 kind of as the jumping off point. It's just not that old of a country not to have these kind of benchmarks as a part of American lore. You know, America should be celebrating these accomplishments of those who rose from the ashes of slavery, you know, and accomplished these amazing feats instead of hearing it 100 years later and kind of just brushing it off to, you know, ancient time. No, this is recent. There is no, you know, ancient American history because America ain't old enough to have an ancient history, unless you're going to include those who were here before American history began. You know, this is just thank you, man, for a reminder of the value of understanding how a nation, you know, especially a nation like this one that has rose to the rank and file of its own ashes to become a powerhouse in the world, you know, these are parts of what made it possible. And this is the part of American history that has never really been celebrated until certain little specks of it come through like now, you know, like hearing about, you know, Helen Burroughs and letting that, you know, to pique my Aunt Edith is still alive, you know, so it's not like, you know, having to talk about her, you know, in past tense, you know, and make no mistake about it, that mind is sharp as a tack. I remember when she was running some things down to me at a recent family reunion. Well, recent meaning about 3 or 4 years ago. Jesus, maybe 5 now. You know, and some of the things she was running down to me, because, you know, I was born into a family system that was mostly hush-hush about the things that weren't, you know, major accomplishments. You know, like only our laundry was clean. We never had dirty laundry. So we didn't, you know, so it was never anything to air. So, and then, you know, talking to her and finding out, oh, damn, you mean we did have some dirty laundry, huh? And after she finished breaking things down to me, I was so set back by it. I had to call out one of my older cousins and say, hey man, look, Aunt Edith, like, she just ran some things down to me that kind of, you know, like, shook me at my root. And I said, can I trust what she was saying? He said, what you mean, man? You think she like senile or something like that? Oh, no. He said, oh, no, understand. Yeah, you know, she can be thorny. Thorny meaning kind of, you know, hard.
Thorny.
You know.
Yeah.
But she knows what she's saying. You know, her mind is sharp as a tack. And I had never had a conversation with her for any extended period of time until that. And I think she was like maybe 102 then. And, man, I can't tell you what it was like to spend that time. Matter of fact, I got so caught into listening to her talk, I forgot all about everybody else who was off somewhere else doing whatever we do with family reunion stuff. I just wanted to just, man, it was just amazing to hear living history instead of waiting for somebody to write a book about it later on. You know, so thank you for doing the work you did, which I'm hoping that would be the kind of thing that would inspire others, you know, of the millions of those.
The millions.
Who listen to our show, to kind of take a look, not so much at Ancestry.com. I mean, that's cool. It'll tell you about names and dates and, you know, but it won't, and it'll tell you about names, births, and deaths, but it won't tell you the story between the dashes, you know. You get to born and died, but you ain't going to get the story in between the dashes. You hear the highlights of the accomplishments that everybody brags about. But come right. on, bring me some of the dirt. You know, bring me some of the, you know, tell me why Uncle Jerry was an asshole. You know, I don't just hear about how great he was working in the Pullman port and all that. But how come nobody ever, you know, invited him by? You know, how did he behave when he drank? You know, let me, it'll help explain why, you know, like what I always joke about. It will help me understand why every time I shake my family tree, I get showered by nuts. It would help me understand. Oh, okay, yeah. This is what Aunt Sally used to do, whatever, you know. This is how Uncle Jerry used to roll. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm so tired, man. You know, I'm so tired of the rich stories, the colorful stories that go untold. You know, as opposed to that obligatory kind of thing to only say the good things. Well, you know, those indigenous to this country have a saying that it's impolite to talk about the dead anyway. So, like, if we're going to talk about them, you know, let's talk about the full story. Because there may be a lot of accomplishments in that. Yeah, my dad died, you know, at 44, you know, a wino, you know, living in a cold water little apartment, you know, over a bus station, you know, where he had gotten so familiar with his delirium tremens that he gave names to the green monkeys that showed up periodically, you know. Yeah, okay, that's the tragic side. Yeah, and, you know, a lot of my uncles would always tell drinking stories about him, you know, like ask James Oscar Green how far it was from Chicago to Gary. He'd say, about a pint. talked about, yeah, but the other part of it they didn't share was he used to give free art lessons at the Art Institute. Matter of fact, that's how my art teacher in high school learned how to draw. You know, that he used to do comic strips for the Defender. You know, can only imagine when I start hearing that other side of the stories, what it must have been like for him, you know, to maybe not have risen from the ashes. But at least it sure explains what was in those ashes. You know what I mean, man?
Oh, man. You know, right on.
You know?
Yeah. I'm sitting here, you know, like, I want more. I'm ready for Write Your Own Book Club again, man. That was wild.
You know, so, you know, that's, you know, Ancestry.com can't tell that. Amongst the many regrets I have, you know, in my life coming up, at the top of the list is never knowing my mother as a woman, you know, never knowing my mother's story. Like, you know, we can talk about Helen Burroughs or Aunt Edith, you know, never knowing, you know, what my mother's story was, you know, what her, you know, struggles and her victories and her setbacks and her heartbreaks. I've never heard her love story. I wish I had her. You know, so not knowing her love story, I don't know how devastating it was for her to pack us up and ship us out and take us to live with her mama, you know. And we ain't going to even talk about, you know, that I don't know nothing about her mother. I mean, I don't know nothing about her mother's husband, you know. So, and I don't even know the names of my dad's mother and father. You know, so, you know, these are, you know, the histories that we got so accustomed to not hearing, that when I hear you bring up what you brought up last week, how that just inspired me to once again not just take a look at Black history, yeah, that's absolute, but to take a look at our history, you know, the immediate history that we can claim and we can look up, or we can talk about and even share what we don't know, and using what we don't know as the jumping off place to be sure that those who come up behind us will at least know from us on, you know, what was up. You know, like, I love talking about my mother, if for no other reason, just so she's a part of the conversation and with, you know, those of my generation and your generation as well. Like, I love it when your cousin Jeff talks about my mother and calls her mum-mum, because only he called her mum-mum, but he talks about his relationship with her. When you talk about, you know, what you remember about my mom, you know, and knowing that you have that memory becomes part of the dialogue. That's the stuff, you know, that books are made out of. And it just, it becomes almost deflating when I hear so many of my people, you know, our people, you know, just kind of discount the value, you know, of putting some kind of account down on paper, you know, not just for those who come after us, but just to give a testimony to the fact that, yeah, we actually were here. And yeah, we actually did leave some footprints. That's just invaluable. You know, if we don't do that, then too quickly we become a faint memory of birthday and death day. You know, and no story in between. Like, that's why I say, man, I don't want nobody still celebrating my birthday after I've been dead for 30 years. I want nobody to say, hey, he'd be 105 years old if he was still alive. Well, try to imagine me as 105 if I was still alive. You know, then you'd have to imagine what I must look like after having been in the grave for 30 years. You know, nobody thinking about it. It's not, you know, that I would still be alive at 105. No, it's that if you want to mark anything, use that as a mark of how long I've been remembered. You know, that's what I'm talking about, man. So I'm sorry, I did it anyway. I wasn't going to start tripping. See what I mean? Every time you start talking about something, you set me off. Man, I done burned up half the show now. Talking about something that even wasn't part of what we were going to talk about tonight. So no, man, thank you. Thank you for doing that work, man.
Even though what you said may not have been what was on the script for tonight, it was still, I think it was still important. I mean, you touched on a lot of things, and a lot of things that we've talked about on other shows. You know, I mean, I had to mute my microphone for a minute because I was laughing too much just listening to, you know, you're like, you know, discussions in the family usually hush hush, you know. Talking about sharing what you don't know, gasp. You know, oh my goodness. I'm gonna clutch my pearls, man.
Not just those that hang around the neck either, right?
Hey.
All right.
Too sensitive for real. No, but, you know, that's cool. So, you know, a lot of times you share things, and I feel the same way, you know, just like a lot of our listening audience. They, you know, we learn a lot of things, and they learn a lot of things listening to us dialogue, you know. You sharing your perspective, my perspective, your something you found, you know, something I found, you know.
Yeah.
So it's always cool. So, you know, to hear you, you know, we still got plenty of time on the show. What are you talking about? But to hear you respond from that, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, shout out, much love to Aunt Edith. You know, much love to Aunt Edith.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Maybe, you know, maybe we can get her daughter Alice to come on the show one day. You know, just to talk about, you know, her experience with her mom, especially when she became, what do they call it, a centurion? I'm not sure what the, you know, once she turned 100. You know, she's become more active once she turned 100. In all them previous 99 years,
oh, wow.
Alice would say, there's never been a dull moment. Everybody wants to interview her. Everybody wants to research her. Everybody wants to tell her story, you know. And it's just wonderful that she and Alice have the kind of relationship they have, you know, to where Alice is right there, you know, not right there attending to her mother, but right there being an active part of her mother's life. You know, I mean, that's to me, that's just, you know, that's just so cool. So, maybe, you know, I haven't, you know, spoken to Alice directly about the possibility, but maybe she'll be open to it, man. I hope so. You know, I see Adam wrote Happy Pie Day. You know, he said, what do you say? Hopefully Armand, that's my youngest son, y'all. That's Will's youngest brother. You know, hopefully Armand will get a kick out of that when he listens. You know, well, hopefully we won't have to wait for when he listens. Let me shut up. You know, we had to get Armand on the show, you know. But the point, I think the reference that Adam is making is that Armand's one of those math kind of teachers, you know. Do you remember what that math thing is that he teaches in Boston, Will? Because I sure don't.
Not algebra. It's like a kind of a calculus kind of a thing.
Kind of a calculus thing, but it's whatever comes after that, you know. I didn't know there was anything after that other than insanity. Yeah, you know. So, and it's like, well, a college prep thing he does, yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Yeah. A lot of algebra, calculus, theories, breaking down math theories, stuff like that. But,
yeah
Adam, he gets a kick out of it. Normally, I hit up Armand on Pi Day. But I didn't hit him
okay.
up today, actually. But anyway.
Okay, so you two, because you're a math dude, too. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I see you came, Centurion? Is that the way you pronounce it? I see you came, okay.
That's why I typed, because I wasn't going to try to pronounce it. Yeah, so thank you.
Centurion, okay. Yeah. All right, so, you know, all of this, you know, is, to me, what I'm always on the fringe of, what I'm always on the edge of, speaking on or reacting to in normal day American news, let's say, you know, like, it's hard for me at this stage of my life not to ask the question whenever I'm hearing anything that's going through the tubes. I don't care, you know, whether it's, you know, the talking heads and the cable shows, or whether it's, you know, movies being spun on Turner Classic Movies, or I watch Wuthering Heights today and ask myself, why in the hell did I watch that? That was the most depressing movie I ever watched in my life. Considered to be one of the 100 greatest movies ever made. Yeah, man, if that's our idea of greatness, no, thank you. But anyway, I was trying to think of a black, my point being, whenever I, you know, hear the news now, see a movie, whatever, you know, whatever the talking lines are, my questions today is, so how does this translate for black people? You know, I just can't get around that anymore. The war going on in Ukraine, and I understand war, you know, as much as anybody can who's not directly participating in the most current one, you know, and I understand the issues of politics around war as much as anybody can who's not directly participating in the politics of it. You know, and understanding that, I can't help today but to ask, and so what does this mean for black folks? You know, like, I read about the shortages of some of the basic necessities that Ukrainians are having to do without, like fuel shortage, heat shortage, food shortage, medical shortage. And then I think about black folks who have a lifetime of having those shortages. You know, not a moment of insurgence. It's a lifetime of those shortages brought on by its own government, who was supposed to be designed to protect them from having to go through those shortages. How can you have so many black folks, you know, living on the streets, dying from poverty? You know, the idea was we would declare a war on poverty, not a war on the poor, you know. So it's hard for me when I'm hearing America talk about the struggles in Ukraine, in the Ukraines, but the same voices aren't speaking at all to the travesty of what a lifetime of disservice has been for black folks. If you're going to talk about one, acknowledge the shortcomings of the other. You know, even when I see, you know, like in Russia, how they're arresting folks, you know, for speaking up. Well, I remember when Mayor Daley put out the shoot to kill order when there were riots at the 63 convention right there in Chicago. You know, I can't help but to remember when the police and the state police, you know, and even the National Guard, those who were supposed to be protecting, you know, the constituency of America, turned dogs and hoses and bayonets on people who were just protesting not having their civil rights. You know, man. So, and even today, knowing that, okay, that Congress is on the verge of passing the Emmett Till anti-lynching. How the hell can it have taken, you know, over 55 years? You know, and what is it about lynching that even happened before Emmett Till was killed? I remember, you know, as a youngster, reading a Jet magazine that had a tally, like you're watching a sports event, of the number of black folks that had been lynched, like in Georgia, maybe in 1950, you know, five or something like that, you know, being old enough to look at an old Jet magazine and say, what, this was like since I've been born? So, you know, and then how can people have, well, you know, lynching is against the law and all the states not. Okay, so then you shouldn't have a problem with this anti-lynching act, you know, being Congress as a law, you know, a federal law, you know, that comes with it grave consequences. How can people be, you know, and therefore how could the head of the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice, you know, just a few years ago declare that the issues of civil rights are not as severe now as they were in the 1900s. How can somebody, Judge Roberts, how can somebody even pin something like that? And the Supreme Court says, bet, that's right, it isn't. You know, and how can you have I almost said the magic word. How can you have an African-American man? How can you have an African-American man who sits on the bench, you know, back up such a statement? You know, I mean, at least, just excuse yourself from the vote, but don't sit there and support that, you know, man. You know, so anyway, something just as basic, well, maybe not so basic, as innocent, you know, as you mentioned in Helen Burroughs. See, that's what gets me sparked, man, you know, within my lifetime. And I hope that, you know, I don't know what John Lewis meant by good trouble any more than I know exactly what Malcolm X meant by any means necessary. But I know somewhere in between good trouble and by any means necessary is demanding that black folk begin to stand up. I mean collectively, you know, not separately. I mean collectively. Like, if we're going to stand up in one facet, we have to bring all facets to bear. That means it's about time for us to start calling out our athletes, you know, time for them to start rising up to the cause. You know, I was raised at a time that we were taught of a time that separated black values from white values. And this is what, you know, I was taught, you know, not just taught at home. I'm talking about in the different types of workshops and dialogues that people were having back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when we were talking about it takes an entire village. Well, it was separating what the two classes, the two at that time, were all about and what the value system, why it was so different. Well, the discussion back in the 70s was that white children are raised around a me consciousness, thinking about individual accomplishments and being set on the track that helps them achieve that. Black people have been brought up to think of us consciousness, if for no other reason, because of our restrictions since slavery. And even open housing didn't free us from the boundaries of the invisible boundaries of living in socioeconomically impoverished communities. So that us versus we has been the big clash in the overall American view of its own constituency. And that's the difficult conversation to have. The us versus the me. You know, I said we, I meant me. The us versus the me. That's what America has a hard time with when people have the audacity, that's your word, you know, to say Black Lives Matter. You know, there's always this blacklash, you know, when we make such, you know, audacious statements like Black Lives Matter. What do you mean? You know, so do, you know, blue lives and green lives. I ain't never seen no green life except when I had OD'd on alcohol. Yeah. Or maybe you do on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah. You know, but anyway, enough of all that, man. So let me calm down. Let me back off a little bit, man. But, you know, I love this vehicle that, you know, we've been blessed to be doing together. At least it's a blessing. Well, it's a blessing. I think we both have concluded and admitted that it's a blessing for the both of us to be doing this kind of thing together, you know. And I'm excited about the possibility of it expanding itself. You know, I really think that, you know, this is the year that, who knows, in a little while we might be hitting on folks who listen to the show. Of course, this might chase them off, you know, to consider being investors to the next project, you know, of expanding this concept of talk radio between, you know, a Black father and a Black son, you know, 75-year-old father and a 50-year-old son, man, what a, I don't know, it's amazing to me. Amazing to me. All right, so there, I did it again. Where are we, man? Bring me back. I was going to talk a little bit about a lot of stuff. I'm looking at the backlog of all the things that I haven't talked about.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Gas. That's my pearl.
I was going to talk about, you know, I still haven't broken down the statistics overall. But the one thing, okay, before I even get to that, I just wanted to just kind of touch again, back up a little bit, what we talked about Wednesday. And I wrote it down, and I'm so glad I did, when I was talking about the major struggles of this global economy, and I talked about the issues of power, control, and greed. And the three that you just popped out with, success, justice, and equality. Man, you know, we have to figure out how to make a T-shirt out of that to promote the greenhouse effect, man.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Power, control, and greed versus success, justice, and equality. You know, I don't know, man. That's man, beautiful, man. Thank you so much for that. I'm hoping that we'll make it a point at some along the way in some juncture to maybe make it a habit to just throw that out there, maybe before the show even comes to an end or where it starts out, instead of wake up, God damn it. I don't know how many people here at the beginning of the show, but I want to tell you, you know, the way you do that, man, the way you tell the wolf story, the way you interject that little bit from Talk to Me, and then you go into the music, you know, but you know, power, control, and greed versus success, justice, and equality. That's just beautiful, man. So, you know, didn't talk about the Blacks in the military. You know, haven't talked yet about the difference between Black as a race and white as a color when it comes to the breakdown of American society. Future shows on the black thing, like history of black America, culture, religion, politics, economic groups, sports, sub-communities, dialects, language, population, and prejudice. Haven't talked any about, you know, oil. We still haven't talked about oil imports and where the majority of our oil imports don't even come from overseas. They come from right within North America, Canada and Mexico, you know, and, you know, it's just such a, you know, I don't know, Clarence Thomas, that's such a difficult topic for me to, that's something you have to talk about because I start cussing. And I start cussing along cultural lines. totally unacceptable on this radio. You know, the history of NATO and the UN, you know, man, right. Which is really important to talk about especially as it relates to Ukraine, you know, understanding why Ukraine is not, you know, a member of NATO yet. You know, and right now the projected date is next year. If Ukraine can survive, you know, this year. This was before Russia invaded. Why did Russia pick now to invade? Why did Putin pick now? Not Russia, but Putin. Why did he pick now to invade? Gas hikes. Go ahead. You get ready to jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just think Putin wanted to grab that piece off the board because he knew they were about to get accepted to the UN. You know, they waited too long. You know, they waited too long. Yeah. The car, and I'm going to keep saying the car because I'm thinking about spades right now. But the car was out there. It was on the table just sitting out there. And they should have been protected. So Putin was like, y'all don't want it? Okay, well I'm going to take it then. But I'm just simplistic. I'm being very simplistic.
Yeah, and that is, no question, that is part of it. It you know, it's the process. There is a process. And most people, and that's why I wanted to talk about it, most people don't understand. It's a process, but there were some things that Ukraine had to do. And NATO's like an exclusive club, man. You know, it's only, 30 countries in it. So it's like, you know, and it started out with 12 and it's grown to 30, you know, but like it's like, you know, there's certain rules that you got to follow in order to become a member of our club. And one of the first rules to follow is that you have to have a constitution that is conducive of the well-being of the people, which, of course, red flags went up for me right away because I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know? Anyway, you know where I'm going with that.
I know where you're going with that. Yes, sir. Yeah. We'll go back. We'll come back to that. We're going to come back to that.
Yeah. And then the issue of gas hikes. But even though I'm not going to talk about, obviously, because we're almost out of time, I won't talk about gas hikes, but I do want to do a disclaimer, a retraction. You know, I had mentioned on a few shows ago that gas stations are only allowed a certain amount of gas per month. I was wrong. That gas stations can get their tanks filled up as much as they want to. They just have to pay for it. You know, and, you know, the gas owners have to pay for it. And they're the retailers. And that's where the issues come in hand. Many run out of gas, and they just – one of the main reasons why gas stations close is because of location and haven't done their research well enough or recognized the issues of the growing competition, especially in neighborhoods. You know, their needs, you know, outweigh their gains. And so they don't have money to be able to pay for their gas shipment. You know, and we know just retail, you know, what that means, you know, and you can't pay for your inventory, you know, then that's when you come up with the out of business sales, you know. So I made a mistake about that. And I wanted to just, you know, I was given some bad information. So my bad, you know, is the matter is the ability to pay. And the ability to pay, of course, is determined by profit. And retailers are the ones who make the least amount of profit. So whenever gas prices are jacked up, the retailers, the ones that we shake our fists at when we see, what? Gas is $3.59 a gallon. You know, these mugs are just robbing us blind. Well, it ain't the dude behind the counter. You know, it's the people who they pay, you know. And but we had to take it out on somebody, right? And so, you know, what used to be a convenience store that was totally separated from gas station, you know, the 21st century, now the convenience store all too often is the neighborhood gas station, you know. So, anyway, I think that's what kind of put White Hen out of business, you know, that the gas station started doing things that, like, the White Hens of the neighborhood used to do, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, when they started having breakfast sandwiches and,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
better coffee,
yeah.
better coffee,
yeah.
you know, at these places.
And
donuts. We can't forget the donuts. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we might be able to forget the pie. Yeah. Well, let's not forget the donuts.
Gotta get that donut.
Okay, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we still
oh,
got,
yeah, Adam
still
mentioned
got
the Montford Point Marines. Yeah, I was going to do some more about that, but maybe we can get Adam to pop in on one show and talk about, you know, the history of the Marine Corps. Obviously not tonight. You know, as he knows, especially from a black perspective, because I think, I don't know, but I think black males have more than sufficed when it's come to, you know, and the Marines, only briefly did Marines take draftees. So the Marine Corps is made of volunteers, man, you know, and there's more than a couple of brothers who joined the Marine Corps, but maybe we can get at them one day to talk about that from a black perspective. Go ahead, Will.
No, I was just, I'm sorry. I was sitting there like, yeah. And then you stopped. I'm like, no. Yeah. And perhaps in some kind of connection with your discussion of blacks in the military, or maybe
right,
we can look
exactly.
more at people, you know, people of color in the military, you know, a lot of Native Americans, you know, and their story in the military. But anyway, that's definitely.
And they have a story. Especially
in
World War II, they have a heck of a story, you know, in the Korean War, you know, and you have a relative who served the West, you know, who went to West Point, you know, and,
right.
you know, just the history of black men and women, you know, who have graduated from West Point. I mean, there's more than enough black history to go around these days, you know, and I don't think it has to be totally contingent on when the hero dies. I think there's more than enough history to be talked about now, you know, and there's no reason why we can't, you know, continue to do what we do. I love what we do, by the way, man. And as much as you thank me, I thank you for letting me just lose my mind for a few minutes, you know, a couple of nights a week.
Yeah. I still
Tell me
think
get out
the
your way, man, so you can land this airplane. Go ahead. Sorry, what, man?
I'm just saying, I think that the audience enjoys when you get into those moments, because I know I do, and I'm sure this is stuff that a lot of people don't hear, and a lot of people share, you know, and I made a joke, but it's serious, you know, that the discussions in a lot of families is hush hush, or
ain't no
you
joke.
Know, things are, you know, or things are just a certain way, you know, and that's just so-and-so, you know, that's just how they
that's
are.
Just that's just Uncle Ernie.
That's just, you know,
it's just how he is.
Yeah.
It's just Uncle Ernie being Uncle Ernie. How many times have I heard that? You know, it's never a singular endeavor. You know, whatever elements of dysfunction shows up in any family, it's contagious. It winds up affecting the entire family one way or the other. You know, but that's the power of denial. You know, it's the inability or refusal to accept the obvious. You know, and the obvious is what we avoid talking about, man. You know, anyway.
But there's still a lot of, within the stories of dysfunction, there's still a lot of stories of, you know, success, quote unquote, there's still a lot of, you know, good stories, a lot of,
as it should be.
Like you said, the story between the dashes, you know, that's the stuff that's missing. You know, the
as
real,
it should
the real,
be, which is
the real fire shit. It's after 8 o'clock now, but, so I'm gonna use that. Excuse me.
You know, and here's the thing: if we told the whole story, think of what it would do for those coming behind us. You know, see, then when they realize, wait a minute, you know, there are flaws in this tree. There, you know, these notches and these branches and these scars, they're here for a reason. And the more I understand that, the more I can understand, in spite of that, you know, the health and the vitality of the tree has not been altered. It still produces healthy fruit. You know, but we only get this distorted story about, the family, then we give a distorted truth. And that distorted truth becomes something that people try to live up to that doesn't even exist, you know, and it's impossible to live up to a lie. That's failure written all over it. And then people wind up within a dysfunctional family system, wind up blaming themselves or let blame be thrust upon them. You know, see, I think we're the original, you know, orchestrators of black sheep. So I just had to sneak that in some kind of way.
Body blow. Let me throw that in there.
Where's the train horn when I need it? Okay, man. All right. I am going to get out your way, man. You know, and let you land this airplane. Don't crash.
Wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's it for tonight. Dad and I are live every Monday and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhousefx, the letter FX, 7 p.m. Yeah, yeah. Or listen to the archive shows. Hit us up. Let us know what you think. We're in the fire before rising from the ashes. You know, what's our story?
Amen.
What's your story? This is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show. We try to provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experience, especially when we share our interpretations and feelings. So again, I'm Will. That's Bill over there. As always, please be blessed, be safe, and most importantly, be yourself, because everybody else is taken. All right, Dad, have a good night. As always, amen.
All right, you will. Love
you,
man.
Talk to you later. Love you, too.
Made me who I am.